I'm on the phone with Jillian Conahan, who's the sales rep for the distributor Kronos that distributes Toy Watch as well as Chariot watches as well as Cat watches. Jillian, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Amit?
I'm doing really well. It's been a long time since we've spoken. I think we ran into each other last year, if I'm not mistaken, for the first time at JCK 2013.
That is right.
Where we met, and man, so much has gone on in the last year, and I'm totally excited to interview you because I don't normally, you know, cover really, like, you know, intra-luxury watches, but I think you guys are doing something really cool and different and innovative, and, you know, I think like I told you when I met you, you guys are like the Swatch of this generation. And
Thank you.
No, absolutely, and I just wanted to, you know, sort of shed some light for my listeners. And first, I appreciate you doing this. How did you get into the watch industry?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, but I guess all of them are. I come from more of an advertising and business development background and was looking to make a change a few years back. And through a friend of mine who works in PR, I connected with Kronos. And really, really just had a great connection with our national sales manager, Roy Goldwasser. And, you know, we kept in touch through a few years. And some of the brands that Kronos repped, in my opinion, got a little bit more alluring. And it was just a right place, right time thing after, you know, keeping in touch for a few years. So I joined Kronos just about a year ago, and it was a bit of a career change for me, but it was one that was well-researched and long in the making.
Well, that's really interesting that you came from a totally different background, so you totally have a different perspective, which I'm sure lends itself in a very cool way, in a different way, to the brand. I mean, they must be very lucky to have you in that sense because you come from a background that's really not watch-related, but it does apply to sort of any business.
Thank you. Yes, that's kind of what I say. I usually say, you know, the business development experience translates, but I had a whole new set of products to learn. And, I mean, for me, it's just the tip of the iceberg. I feel fortunate that, you know, coming in on a brand like Toy Watch, which is so heavy on the marketing side and more of the style and design side, you know, I think I would have been a sitting duck if I came into a brand known for its complications because there's just so much to learn. But I do have to say that in this industry, I do find that people are really willing to share their experience with you and help educate you and onboard you. And that's kind of different from a corporate environment where a lot of times it's almost like knowledge is power. And so people withhold things from you in order to get a competitive edge. So I really appreciate the you know, the reception that I've gotten within the watch and jewelry industry thus far.
I'm really happy to hear that. I mean, I think that's also due in part because the industry is constantly changing, and someone who could be the president of a major brand X today could be, you know, the kind of sales rep for brand E tomorrow. So I think, you know, in the last 5 years especially, I think a lot of people have been humbled, and it's nice to see that people have given you a warm welcome. I mean, you're a very warm person, and you deserve it, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, you lent your ear and your sort of experience in the industry. And it's interesting because I've interviewed quite a few people who have been in the industry for 20 plus years. So it's kind of nice to get a fresh perspective of someone who's never sort of really started in this industry and,
right,
and sort of emerged into it. It's a really, really cool. How do you see like toy watches, for instance, now? I mean, I see it growing. I'll just give you my point of reference, being in, you know, luxury my entire life and seeing Toy Watch sort of emerge in the last 5 to 7 years. I believe the company was started in 2006.
Correct.
And where is the brand sort of designed and made today?
It's designed out of Italy.
Okay.
Which I think, you know, lends it a certain cool factor. And I think that's reflected in some of the styles. And then it's a Japanese movement, so, you know, then we feel pretty strongly that it's getting a really good technology in a fashion watch line.
Yeah, I find if the movements are not Swiss, they're definitely Japanese, which is cool because, you know, the Japanese at one time, as I'm sure you've been made aware or may have been aware before, you know, almost ruined the entire watch industry in the 80s, the Swiss watch industry.
Right.
But it's nice to see that they're emerging and can still play in this realm and it's all good now. But, you know, you guys definitely have, I think it's kind of interesting that you've made, if I look at a toy watch and I see the different collections you have, I think you have almost 30 different collections, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe mm-hmm. less. A lot of them I've noticed just from being a watch guy and being a techie guy that they're very heavily influenced by sort of Rolex design. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And that is really the foundation for the beginnings of Toy Watch. So, you know, I think it's undisputable that Rolex is the it brand of the watch, you know, the fine
by
watch
far,
industry.
By far. They're the pinnacle.
And yes, the pinnacle. And, you know, I think in the middle part of last decade, people were looking for something a little bit fresh and unique and maybe even down market from Rolex. And so that was sort of the basis for the first toy watch designs. And you will still find those in our collections today. That's, you know, whether I think the materials that we used at the beginning are called plasteramic, which is a high quality, scientifically designed plastic that has more of a ceramic luster and feel to it. So that was the beginning of Toy Watch. And then since then, the Rolex stylings have remained, but we've expanded into other materials. We've added Swarovski crystals and then expanded from there into other, you know, Me Too watches. So we have a couple that are meant to look like a Panerai. We have one that is meant to be close to the Bulgari snake wrap bracelet and so on.
Right. So you've taken sort of traditional iconic business models and you've made them really fun and accessible and affordable, which I think is very exciting because let's face it, not everyone can mess in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. That's obviously dominating the market right now.
Right.
And, you know, I think like when I used to start seeing Toy Watch, you've also influenced a lot of, I think, other manufacturers, or people who have never gone into the realm of watchmaking or taking it seriously. And when I say that, I mean in the realm of just watches in general. Like, I see a lot of influence now from someone like Michael Kors, who's, you know,
yes,
basically taken, you know, your design aesthetic and sort of ran with it, you know, which is a kudos to you guys because, you know, I mean, I think you guys made a certain style iconic. You made a very fun Rolex sort of, and people, let me just tell you that's a kudos to Rolex and to Panerai and to Bulgari and some of the others that Toy Watch has kind of adapted or been inspired by in their business model of how timeless their design language is. And you can
Absolutely.
See it very clearly in all their watches, whether it's, you know, plasteramic or whether it's ceramic or any of the other, the velvety ones that you guys have. It's really interesting what you guys have done with it without, you know, seeming like you're, you can buy them in a coin operated machine being perceived as a cheap watch. You guys are considered like a fun, fashion forward watch. And I think there's a very fine line between those.
Yeah, it is. And thank you for noticing that because, you know, sometimes that is an objection that we face, whether it's at new retail accounts or even with the end consumer. And I think when they have an opportunity to compare, you know, a $25 plastic watch against a $145 plastic toy watch, you know, it's night and day. You know, the feel of it is different. The movement, of course, is different, the crown. And then, of course, branding is so important. So, you know, we invest in PR. We invest in blogger programs and just being in places that are going to elevate you know, a fashion watch into more of a lifestyle brand.
Well, that's really fun. I mean, I have to say, it's like you would never, I mean, you'd never probably catch me writing about someone like Toy Watch 5 years ago. You know, it's, I mean, mm-hmm. I think people's minds have opened. I think after everybody's been really humbled in the industry in the last 5 to 6 years, I think we're now also seeing that these watches that were once 3 to 5 thousand, like Panerai and Rolex, are now 10 to 15 thousand. They're just not really that accessible, or, I mean, they're still fun to collect and aspire for, but, you know, let's face it, you've got to wait longer to be able to attain those brands. So,
right.
You know, to have 5 or 10 toy watches and, you know, kind of change the look around, I mean, it's not like these things are going to appreciate in value by any stretch of the imagination, unless I'm completely wrong. But at the same time, you can have a plethora, variety of different watches that are iconic and fun to collect. And, you know, I know you guys are heavily Japanese movement right now, but do you guys have any plans to go possibly to the automatic or, you know, higher end movement calibers?
So we actually do have one automatic collection. It's called the Toy to Fly Skeleton, and there's three styles within the collection, and I think it's really representative of who Toy Watch is, because it is, you know, sort of a watch connoisseur's watch, but it comes in sub $400. So it's a good way to get, you know, your first automatic watch, and you can see the movement, and, you know, it's a great watch. It's actually the one that I first chose myself to wear from the collection, because I do think there's a certain prestige to wearing an automatic watch, you know, whether
Definitely.
You saved your whole life to buy a $20,000 one, or if you're, you know, able to afford one under $500. So, you know, I don't know what our plans are down the road. You know, I think certainly that's aspirational for Toy Watch. At this point, you know, in some ways, Toy Watch has been humbled too. And so we have introduced collections more on the lower side of the scale for now. We just introduced a $129 collection and another at $145. And that's truthfully to be relevant in these economic times. You know, I still don't think we've rebounded from 2008. And I don't know if we ever will. You know, I think luxury will always be luxury, and that will be a part of consumers' lives who can afford it. But I think overall, the core consumer is expecting more value in what they get now. So
100%.
Whether that means, and it means either, you know, spending less money to get something, or it means having more value in the styles that they were accustomed to getting. And, you know, using that as an example, we have a new introduction that's $295, you know, which is a normal price point for Toy Watch, but it contains crystals on the bezel, as well as the velvety. And normally those two details drive up the cost, but, you know, we leaned on our suppliers so that we could bring both of those qualities to the watch, because our consumers are expecting that.
Well, that's good. To be able to be adaptable in the times is very important. And I think also
You have to.
And I think, Jillian, you've seen as well, like, I mean, look at Rolex introducing Tudor. You know, by them introducing Tudor into the market in 2013 in September, it's totally blown the doors off of the $3,000 to $5,000 price range that's been abandoned for many years. And I think that not just the $3,000 to $5,000 range, but I think even the range you're in, you know, like sub 1,000, like, I think it opens, you know, it's a really good thing for everybody that Tudor's come back to the market. And I think that, you know, there's a need for these kind of things. I think people, as much as they want to aspire and have things that they can, you know, collect and look forward to and be on the hunt for, and the journey and the search, which is, you know, ultimately for a watch collector, I think the biggest fantasy and dream is to be able to afford those things. But I think, you know, for someone who wants a watch, I'll give an example. When I you know, wrote about the vintage diver you guys have, the vintage military diver, which I think is an amazing value. I mean, under $300, and very reminiscent of, you know, a military submariner. I believe they're 40 millimeters in size.
Yes.
You know, that, it's funny, like, you know, I send out a newsletter, which you get as well, and I included that in my newsletter to educate my viewership. And, you know, I sold a client a Tudor watch, and she actually now is obsessed with the military, the toy watch, vintage military one, and she wants to buy one.
And that's great.
You know, and it's like, I think about it now, and I'm like, that's awesome. Like, this is a woman who just spent $5,000 on a Tudor and wants that watch too. And she's like, I want the toy watch to be my everyday watch, and the Tudor is going to be my evening watch. And I'm like, whoa,
exactly.
That's awesome. That's so great.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right.
Like, you can play in both fields. I mean, I want a toy watch for myself, and I probably would never have worn a toy watch. And this is, and I started my career in the, you know, selling Swatch watches in late 80s, early 90s. So it's almost like I'm returning. I think we all sort of come back to where we started at some point.
Right.
But, you know, and that's what I like about toy watch. It reminds me very much of sort of my roots, you know. It sort of keeps me grounded in this, you know, in this field where we've become connoisseurs and experts and collectors, and we have an opinion and everything. And at some point, I think we all become, in a way, we all become, not, we don't intend to, but we just, by nature of the business, kind of become snobs in a way. And I think that this is a nice way of getting back into the industry in a very accessible, everyday kind of girl next door kind of way.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, and that's who Toy Watch wants to be in the eyes of consumers.
That's great. And how do you guys, like, I mean, you know, I've seen your distribution channels as well. I mean, it's, you're in the best of the best. You're in the creme de la creme. You're in the best department stores, including Bergdorf Goodman, Neiman Marcus, you know, those kind of department stores. And I'm sure you're in major department stores around the world as well. I would assume you must be in Harrods as well in London. I'm not sure if you are or not. I didn't look at where your distribution is in London. But, you know, do you guys plan to open more retailers within the U.S.? Because I know you're in selected ones, or you're in
yep,
sort of chain-type retailers. Would you guys be open to going into, you know, an independent retailer?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. And I would say historically we've been found in fine jewelers. And the mentality there is, you know, you have a consumer who's shopping for a big purchase, you know, like a Rolex or, you know, you name the brand. And they might have to come to a store 3 or 4 times because it's that big a purchase and they want to do it right. But that doesn't mean the first time that they wouldn't, you know, have an impulse purchase on the way out. And that's what Toy Watch can be. And then, you know, in addition to that, I think we have some new introductions that are even relevant at more of like gift boutiques. We have a collection called Maya, which features a macrame bracelet. And so it really fits into that kind of like Coachella look, where, you know, consumers, mostly women, are wearing, you know, an armful of bracelets. And this watch fits
like
right
urban chic
that
kind of stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, I think that's the beauty of a brand like Toy Watch, because our collections are so expansive. It does give us the ability to be relevant at majors, you know, fine jewelry, boutique, you know, and even beyond. You know, I can see it fitting into, I don't know, some other alternate channel, you know, that we haven't even thought of yet.
So would you, do you have any toy watch boutiques? I mean, I would think that something like that with the array of collections you have would be, you know, a really fun experience, a very engaging experience for someone who's just getting into watches. You know, it's almost
right,
like, you know, it's almost like, I mean, I'm going to compare it to something completely and utterly different. I don't know if you've ever seen Nespresso, or if you're into coffee,
mm-hmm,
for instance, but they're opening up their own boutiques now. And, you know, to me, Nespresso is very accessible, but it's very well made and it's great quality. I love good quality coffee, and but it's still like, it's still a high end, like a, it's not a high end brand, it's not the highest end brand, but it's still a quality brand. And I think that just being able to go in there and try the different flavors and sample things and look at things and see the colors and be engaged and see the machines and the accessories and the accoutrements, that's what makes people engaged and want to stay. I can totally see that with your brand.
I mean, I take that as a huge compliment. First of all, I'm a huge coffee drinker, so you're speaking my language. I agree, Nespresso, the experience, it almost sells the brand itself.
Absolutely.
We do have boutiques globally here in the United States, not at present. You know, I think if appropriate, we would love to be able to do that. You know, right now, I don't know if it's into our immediate plans. We've been more focused on working with retailers that we already have relationships with. But down the road, I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, man. I mean, who knows? We may see a toy watch flagship boutique in New York City. You never know. And I think that would be great for you guys. But, you know, it's also pretty amazing with the amount of, you know, PR that goes into your brand. I've seen it in many, many, many magazines, not just fashion magazines and not just sort of, you know, the weeklies that you may see, but many different sorts of magazines. I'm sure you guys, I mean, it's one thing to place an ad in a magazine. If you have money, anyone can place ads in magazines. But
right.
I've seen you guys more editorialized, which is pretty interesting for a low-end brand as well, because, you know, to me, editorial is so much more important and effective than placing an ad, because, you know, when you look at an ad, you're like, okay, they spent $100,000 this month and they're in the middle of the magazine. Great. But when you get editorialized, it brings a different flavor and a different credibility to the brand. You know, whoever is doing your PR or marketing is doing a great job, and I hope it just continues. But, you know, I'm sure I've seen you personally do social media on your Facebook and stuff. How important is social media to your brand?
Oh, it's hugely important. That is part of our PR strategy, and I think social, you know, the definition is very wide. So the way we approach social, I think Instagram is really critical because it's so visual, and Toy Watch with its bright colors, it's just a very arresting brand. Blogger programs are really important. I mean, I think it's just amazing how the fashion sphere has shifted so much in the past 5 years, where bloggers are on the front row of Fashion Week.
Absolutely. Of not just fashion, but it's like, look at, if you look at, like, in the watch world, if you looked at, you know, let's say, like, Revolution Magazine or Watch Time or any of these big magazines, you know, yes, they're still relevant, and print is, you know, a lot of people argue it's on its way out, and I agree it is on its way out. Why would you, you know, I mean, there is something very mammalian and something that's very cool about still being able to hold a magazine and flip through it and be engaged with it, and I think there will still always be a core market for those people who want to look at magazines. But in order to access it to the world, you know, the iPad has become the modern-day magazine. For anyone. And I feel like, you know, your brand, especially being so visual, is very, very important. So, I mean, it that makes it that much more attainable. And to your point, bloggers are the ones now at the forefront that are being invited by all of the watch brands to kind of, it used to be, it was the watch magazines. Now it's the bloggers, because they're the ones making the news. They're the ones setting the trends. They're the ones who are the tastemakers. And it's great to see that you guys are so supportive of bloggers, you know?
We are. And, you know, that being said, it's not at the expense of traditional media. I still subscribe to magazines. I am a dinosaur. But and also the watch publications are really important to us. You know, but it needs to be a multimedia strategy. You know, I think the beauty of bloggers is not just their reach, but also the fact that they, you can, you know, because it's a digital media, a lot of times you can track their effectiveness, whereas print media, sometimes it's a lot, you know, less direct. So we embrace them all.
Are you guys planning on showing at Basel or?
Yes. Yep. We will be at Basel. We'll be again at JCK. Obviously Basel is the Peace Day Resistance, and we're really proud to be there. And if you give me 1 second, I'll tell you exactly where we'll be. Unfortunately, I will not be in attendance, but, our
national sales manager, Vegas, right?
I'll be in Vegas, yes,
great.
Which is a good concession.
Well, great. If you are in Vegas, hopefully this time we'll be able to break bread or have a drink together.
Oh, yes, let's do that. Let's plan on it. And
sure.
Regarding Basel, we will be in Hall 1.2 in Booth D3. So
okay.
For any listeners out there who are going to be at Basel 2, please stop by.
And for all of those of you who are not aware, Basel is you know, I've said this on different occasions, but it's kind of like the Oscars for the watch industry. There are other sort of watch events that happen, but this is definitely the biggest, the baddest, and the best with all of the major brands from Patek Philippe to Rolex, Toy Watch included, in different halls, and it's just watches upon watches upon watches, and it's pretty cool that you guys are there. The good thing for you guys, too, is that there's a lot of room to expand because from what I've seen, you guys aren't just like, you guys don't just make watches. You also make like accessories as well, right? Like you do jewelry.
We do. I think that's, we're a young company and that's even younger still. But we're always experimenting with how can we, continue to be a strong and relevant brand in the minds of consumers. So, Toy Watch was founded by a man named Marco Mavilla, who had a very, very strong design philosophy. And he went away for a few years to explore some other projects, and now he's back as a consultant. And so,
awesome.
We're thrilled because that's going to bring in a lot of new creativity, and that's where, some of these new accessories are coming in. I've seen rings. I've seen like a 2-in-1 sort of convertible ring product, which was pretty cool.
Ring watch.
We did ring watches. Believe it or not, they were just okay. I think that's a trend that's very nostalgic, and it happens for a finite period and then it goes away. So we'll keep looking for those time sensitive. Little toy watch boosters, but in the meantime, hang on to our piece of the consumer's mind share.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally an 80s sort of LA kind of thing, and it's, look, trends come and go, and I think things that are iconic today, become a thing of the past and then they come back. But that's what's so interesting about a brand like yours, because it's always evolving. There's always it's like the fashion world of ready to wear. You got to change with the times, and you guys are ready to do that. Who would you consider to be sort of your competition today in the market?
I mean, of course, Michael Kors, I think, is the golden standard right now of fashion watches. They have a huge market share, and they're the ones that are driving the category. Also in that category, you have a lot of brands that have more of a fashion heritage. So Kate Spade, Marc Jacobs, even Karl Lagerfeld came out with something. The good thing is that Toy Watch is different from them in that respect, in that we came up as a watch brand. In our own special way, I think we have our own leg up on the competition.
You guys are in a niche. I mean, I perceive personally from a watch connoisseur's point of view, okay, all these are lower end brands, but I consider when I look at them, it's weird. It's almost like a contradictory statement what I'm about to say, but it's very true that when I look at major fashion designers who come out with watches, I perceive those watches to be cheap, right? When I look at a toy watch, even though it is inexpensive, I don't look at it to be cheap. I look at it to be iconic and accessible. So which is very important to the way you guys market, because you guys, I guess the fact that you guys even though you guys are in department stores, you're not everywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you're not hoard out. You know, where when I look at these some of these other brands, they are hoard out. They're completely.
It's true. Yeah, and I think that is a strategic decision on our part. You know, we do happen to sit next to some brands like that. But I think in terms of philosophy and spirit, maybe we're more aligned with like a Nixon, you know, who has unique designs and, you know, it's a brand that I very much respect.
I agree with you. I mean, that's probably one of the only few brands that I respect. But I don't know if you had a chance to recently see in the next 6 months, everyone will be talking about this brand. But there's a new brand that's emerged on the scene called Martinero, made out of New York. That are using Japanese movements as well. And there's only two models and, there are two owners and basically their price points are under $500. And what they've done is they've been able to, take that accessibility factor, make limited edition watches. But on top of that, they're allowing the consumer to go on their website and pick the color of the hands and pick the color of the dial and pick the strap. You know,
that is going to be a good brand. You can tell already.
Yeah. So I feel like there are some amazing brands like yours and Martinero and a couple of others that I see that are really emerging onto the scene and that are going to take the world by storm. And as long as they're not hoard out, I see longevity for these brands because that's when it gets dangerous.
It is. Yeah. When there's a boom, there's a bust.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, winding down, Jillian, what about you guys doing like a smartwatch? Do you see that happening?
You know, I have not seen it in plans, but that's not to say that, you know, it's not happening somewhere. You know, we're pretty far down the product development chain. You know, we give feedback that we hear on the streets to Toy Watch Italy, but they're really the whole, you know, brains behind the product development. So it could very well be that I'm just out of the loop, you know, because, you know, I think that smartwatches, that they're real. I think I'm always impressed. I always see this billboard in like Herald Square in New York. And it's a Samsung smartwatch. And, you know, I, as a traditional watch representative, I should scoff at it. But it's done so well. You know, I mentioned before the girl who has a whole set of bangles on her wrist. And Samsung styled their smartwatch like that. And they bought this gorgeous billboard. And, you know, even though that's very contrary to the products that I rep, I can't help but think, damn, that looks good. So, you know, there's a possibility that Toy Watch could be included in that trend as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how the watch industry is evolving. And it's, you know, right now it's a major debate. Will the high-end luxury watch market, will it be able to sustain smartwatches? And I think, you know, for the accessible brands, I see that happening for sure, like Toy Watch or you know, watches up to 1,000. I just don't see really, you know, the consumer, because let's face it, if Rolex did a smartwatch, what would they charge for it? And would someone pay 8 or 10 grand for a Rolex smartwatch? I just don't see that happening, unless it could, unlock your house and start your car and be like a real tool watch, you know, like something that's just so incredible. I can't see.
And it would still have to look like a Rolex too. So,
exactly.
I mean, I think that's a pretty tall order.
Yeah,
I think the smartwatches are, it's, you know, it's almost like a fashion watch. You're going to have a fashion watch / smartwatch. And if you're a watch connoisseur, then you'll still be wowed by, you know, the brand that you love, Cartier or Chariot, only because I have to say that, but, you know.
Thank you so much for, you know, enlightening and offering a perspective that I think is very valuable and important to the general public. And, you know, hopefully we'll see each other soon at JCK. And thank you for doing this.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Take care. Well, there you have it, people. That was my one-on-one interview with Jillian Conahan, who's a sales rep for the distributor for Toy Watches, which is Kronos. I appreciate her time, even though she's
new into the industry, only a year old. She definitely has great perspective, and I like that she's not jaded, and she's quite secure with what she's doing, and I appreciate her time. So thank you, Jillian. If you, I also want to thank Shalvoy Music and Flipside for providing the music to this podcast. If you want to know what's going on in the watch industry, please log on to my website, www.amitdevhonda.com. You can also check out my Twitter, my Facebook, and my Instagram. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.